Hello and welcome to Wise Women, The Vicar and the Witch. I'm Maggie Whitehouse and I'm the Vicar.
And I'm Susie Crockford and I'm the Witch. We are perceived, perhaps, as being on opposite ends of a spectrum, but we're friends and we see the common threads of our different experience of the sacred. So please join us as we discuss
life, the universe and everything.
Hello again and welcome. Well, we are going into darker days. Now, whether that's a metaphor as well as simply the fact that the light is fading as we get into winter. And I've been asked a lot, especially on my Tuesday night online regular course. No, it's not a course, it's a whatever, every week.
I'm going to start a gathering.
No, I'm not going to start that again. I'm just going to sound like a prat and that's okay. But the question is, how do we cope? We're going into the darkness. We're going into times which are quite often difficult for people who have SAD, you know, the seasonal affective disorder. And particularly now with threats of new lockdowns and the second wave, if you believe in it, which some people don't, or if you don't, the fighting to get other people not to believe in it or whatever. So I'd like to ask you, Susie, please, what are the strategies that you use for not handling the darkness, because it's a perfectly natural process, but you do change habits and stuff, I'm sure. So could you tell us what you do for the time approaching the darkest days?
Okay. I think this is an important topic, actually, for lots of people who don't know what to do with the time approaching the darkest days. And I think that our enforced separation is going to create a lot more of people really having difficulty with these times. Because when we were in, you know, lockdown, separation, all the rest of it previously, everyone discovered gardening.
Mm-hmm.
Not everyone. Lots of people discovered gardening, and a lot of people discovered the joys of going out for a walk. And those are two things which are less appealing at this time of year. Although, having said that, actually, if you are in a position to continue gardening and continue going out for a walk, those are the two things that I would actually continue to say are likely to help the most. Mm-hmm. And I think I do give huge credit to my little dog, because going out for a walk every day without fail, come hell or high waters, it's raining, it's snowing, it's freezing, whatever, I will go out for a walk, and I know that that absolutely makes me feel better. I can connect with all that is outside of my door and with my body as a, you know, stomping elemental thing. And that is so good for our mental health. If you are in the incredibly unfortunate position of being a person who can't go out for whatever reason, I think there are lots of really important things to do at this time of year. The first being the thing that we actually both said first when we talked about let's talk about this, which is to light a candle. And that to have an agreement with other people who you know and love, that every day or every week or whatever it is, at a particular time, you're all going to light a candle together, is an exquisite thing to do. And you know, candles and light, as we said last time, have been a symbol, a metaphor for the spirits, for that which is good, probably since Dot. And the lighting of a candle is, you know, a candle casts a very particular light. It's a very beautiful thing. It's typically far more beautiful than electricity. And actually, to light a candle and sit in the candlelight, so turn out the light lights and sit in the candlelight, or maybe even to light more than one candle and sit in the candlelight, is, you know, as long as you're careful and can be careful, you know, you're not going to accidentally set fire to yourself or the house or whatever. The sitting in candlelight, to me, is one of the great joys of winter. I love sitting in candlelight. I love sitting in a dark room with only the fire. And I fully understand that not everyone's got access to a fire. But
they might have a house that's not as damp.
Yes, yes. Yes, many are the joys of the fire in this house.
I wasn't criticising, Tutu. There are houses also damp and we need fires.
Yeah. But yeah, you know, to sit with fire, to sit with the flame, and the especially, and in fact, I really can't emphasise this point enough. Please, if you can at all countenance the expense, please buy yourself a beeswax candle. The light from a beeswax candle is an exquisite yellow colour. It's warm. The emanations, physical, literal emanations into air from a beeswax candle are good for you. A beeswax candle will purify the air and it releases both scent and, I don't know, things I have no word for other than emanations, which are positively good for you. I don't know about soy candles. I think they probably don't release anything particularly good, but they also don't release anything particularly bad. Whereas a traditional old-fashioned white, basically petrochemical candle, releases toxins into the air, significant quantities of toxins. So they do the opposite of what a beeswax candle does.
Right.
And so really don't sit in a room with loads of those things lit. And if you suffer from a mysterious cough, and it's not COVID, but you can't, never been able to really quite understand where your mysterious cough comes from, try swapping all of your petrochemical candles for beeswax candles, and you might well find it goes, because the air quality in a room where a petrochemical candle is burning is pants, really pants.
Interesting. Very interesting. So that's Christmas present sorted.
Good, jolly good, yes.
Now, I'm going to call you to account on this, being with a journalistic head on, which is lighting a candle, but we were talking last time about the value of darkness.
Oh, totally, which is why I'm encouraging you to sit in the darkness with your lighted candle, partly. But also, and also to, you know, to enjoy the darkness and to enjoy, please let the lighting of the candle in the darkness and, well, or sitting in the darkness, or sitting in the darkness with your fire, or sitting in the darkness just with yourself, whatever it is. Another thing I would hugely encourage people to do is to be okay with just sitting and to sit with a fire or with a candle and to dream or let your thoughts idly ramble around is something that there is no encouragement in the kind of mainstream society.
We must be entertained.
We must be entertained. We must listen to marvellous podcast.
It's toxic.
The Vicar and the Witch, marvellous. Listen to it.
Yes.
But it's toxic, yeah. Or endlessly, you know, binge watch whatever it is. And or not binge watch, but
distract without sitting with the situation.
Yeah. Mm. Well, and just generally to be entertained, you know. And there is, again, back to the whole active and receptive. We are inculcated to be constantly active. And so even though actually there is an argument for sitting in front of the telly being receptive in that you sit there quite frequently, I mean, certainly in my own case, like a sack of potatoes, just with my mind in neutral, probably kind of gulping at whatever it is, which, you know, sometimes that's a good thing to do, especially if you can do it with another human. Sometimes it's a companionable place to be, to be entertained in that way. But to be entertained in that or any way all of the time is, in my humble opinion, a recipe for disaster, because you're not giving the inner workings of your soul, of your mind, of your creative being in particular, an opportunity to just mull. And from the mull comes true creativity, typically. That they say now that there's I read some bit of research somewhere that was saying that there's every possibility that we're going to have generations of children who aren't particularly creative because they've never been bored.
Yes.
And that if there's the tiniest thread of creativity in your bones anywhere, winter's a great time to get that out. You know, I'm a one sock a year kind of a woman. But if I'm going to knit a sock, it'll be at some point from now until the garden needs clearing. And actually, on the subject of clearing the garden, please, please, please leave all those beautiful fallen leaves and dead and dying nettles and all the rest of it, for the many, many things that need them to thrive and flourish. Butterflies, hedgehogs, all kinds of moths, all sorts of things live under the rotting leaves. And if you tidy them away, you are destroying a really seriously important habitat. So, yeah.
What else can people do? Because, yes, that is an answer, but people go, well, you know, I can't do that, I can't get a beeswax candle, I can't do this, I can't do that. I would say start a project, perhaps, but I would also say that the most important thing is to think about something like, I buy prepared hyacinths each year,
mm-hmm.
which you plant them and you put them in the darkness in a cupboard. Under the stairs or something like that. And it's not until you bring them out that they start to live. Because when they're in the darkness, the roots go down. And that's what happens in the dark days, is the roots go down. So I always think it's a really useful thing to be preparation for something.
Mm-hmm.
At this time, what can I learn? What can I study? What can I do to strengthen me? And in my understanding. Because then when the light returns, I shall bring the hyacinths out and start the process of the light coming back. And I never buy anything like that before Christmas until the year has turned. Because for me, I want to honour the going down into the darkness, which is very difficult with seasonal affective syndrome. But these are principles. Everybody has to adapt them as much as they can. And also, make quite sure you've got vitamin D.
Which is
very practical. We do not in the United Kingdom have enough sunshine to give us sufficient vitamin D for total health, except for about a month a year.
Really?
Apparently.
Are you sure?
Well, if you're ill, yes. If you're healthy, you'll probably get enough. But when I had non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, I studied with a man who's survived it 25 years ago, and has done oodles of research, you know, medically legitimated research about the value of vitamin C, which is the equivalent of sunlight.
C or D?
D. Sorry, D. Well, C as well, but D is, we are nearly all under on vitamin D. And something like that, even if that's complete hogwash, the fact that you're mentally saying, I will try and take this supplement or food that contains this supplement, because supplements can be expensive. I will make sure I have nutritious, vitamin-laden food to strengthen my immune system through this period. And also, I definitely have elderberry.
Yeah, me too.
Because elderberries are purported to be as good against flu as a vaccine, if not better.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. Well, and proven over hundreds, if not thousands of years, rather than made up last week.
And if you haven't got elderberries, you can get dried elderberries from places like Neil Yards. Other shops also apply. and you can make a syrup or a jelly or something like that and take a spoonful a day, which is absolutely delicious.
Really good for your immune system.
Very good for the immune system. There's not the one good thing, there's many good things about the internet, but there are wonderful foraging groups on social media and all sorts of websites that can tell you what the herbal lore is for this time of year.
Definitely. Yeah. And you were saying, the internet surely has been the saviour of the majority of people who have had to shield or isolate or whatever, for whatever reason. But I do think that there is constantly a kind of serious forces of opposition at play within us at this time of year, because as we get nearer and nearer and nearer to Christmas, there tends to be more and more and more expectation in the majority of us that we will party, celebrate, gather together, you know, whatever, sit around a something and eat and drink. And that if you can't, or if that's been your history, or if it's your expectation, this time of year is going to be 100 times more miserable than it's ever been before. And that, therefore, I think it's really important, even if you hate being on Zoom or Skype or the telephone or WhatsApp or, you know, any of those many ways in which it's possible to connect. If connection is what is being called for within you as we head towards solstice, then try and get it.
Find a group.
Yeah, by fair means or foul. Yeah. Phone your friends. Phone your friends. I'm rubbish at phoning my friends.
But I'm not that good. It's so, nowadays, you don't know when you're going to interrupt them. You don't want to phone after supper in case they're watching something, or you don't want to phone before supper in case they're cooking. So I end up making appointments to phone friends, which is ridiculous.
I'm just really bad at it. I will typically think of phoning somebody at about 10:30 at night, which I know is very impolite.
Don't try it with us.
No, exactly. No, I can't phone most of the people I know at 10:30 at night, although there are one or two. But yes, you know, I think phone a friend is we should have that written on some post-it note that we go past really, really often, because loneliness is miserable and is one of those things that spirals very easily into serious depression.
Yes.
On the other hand, for me anyway, speaking personally, in the run-up to that time where it all goes into stillness and darkness and all the rest of it, there is typically a bit of a frenzy of kind of feeling jolly, feeling like I want to gather with people. And in my case, particularly, I want to go and stand around bonfires. You know, I'm so happy that we've got Guy Fawkes. That's my idea of a perfect winter's evening. But that after Christmas, there is nothing I want more than to be allowed to sit either in the dark, just dreaming or thinking or whatever, or in a comfy corner with a book or, like you say, a project, some knitting or some sewing or something, and to be quiet and to be alone. And those are, you know, culturally, within the kind of slightly left-field culture of the bubble that is this particular area of the country, that's very much our expectation. But in the greater culture, that's really frowned upon. I am weird to a lot of the sort of friends and family I have in other parts of the country for basically wanting to hibernate. But I really do feel like we're a mammal. Lots of mammals hibernate. It's a perfectly sane and sensible thing to do. And again, you know, even if you are having to be online or in an office or anywhere between 9 and 5 days a week or whatever it is, if that's what you feel like, I think it's so important to pander to it as best you can, you know, to be allowing of our need for the darkness and not to be constantly trying to put it at bay. And so once again, I send you back to dark room with maybe just the one candle or maybe none at all. We need it.
And you send me back to Sabbath. A lady on our Kabbalah group on Tuesday night just said, and it was so valid and so utterly obvious. I was thinking, oh God, why haven't I seen that one before? And she said she was a great protagonist for the world to have a simultaneous Sabbath. All take the day off at once. Rest the whole world.
Wow, wouldn't that be amazing?
Now, at the moment, in religious groups, it's Saturday and or Sunday. So at least part of the world takes that time out. But the idea of saying all together in one community we will rest, we will seek joy, we're not in work, but in learning or study or, you know, just lovely study. I don't mean doing your maths homework, but reading a good book, talking with a friend, just sitting back. And just imagine if everybody took that day. And of course, everybody's going to go, well, you can't do that. You've got to have doctors, you've got to have nurses, you've got to have this, you've got to have that. But we don't have to have shops open on a Sunday. We won't die without a shop on Sundays. We really, really,
I could have died on Sunday.
You know what I mean. The principle of groups doing things together. And come next Tuesday at the regular group, I'm going to suggest to everybody that we all light a candle when we start. Because I light candles when I do an invocation to starters. So I'm going to say we all light a candle at the beginning of this. and we let that candle burn. And let's hope it's a beeswax candle, because I'll suggest it. But then there was a real call last Tuesday when one of us said, we don't really know each other yet very well. There's more than 20 people on this Zoom call. And a lot more have come during the pandemic from all over the world because they haven't got physical groups anymore. And it was, I was about to launch into something. I just thought, that's a good call. Because we are soul companions.
That's how I begin every single one of my trainings, whether it's on Zoom or in person, is with a spiel about the importance of connection. And that if what we're seeking is connection, whether it be with the divine, with the spirits, with anything, the way you do something is the way you do everything. And so the fastest way to get good at connection is to get good at connection. So to share. And that's what we do always. We light a candle, we drop into, if we're on Zoom, a kind of imaginary circle together, and all take one another's hands, and I get them all to write the names and draw the circle in front of them so they can see, this is who's sitting next to me, on to my right and to my left, and this is who's opposite me. And we share, we find connection. And that's been a... I suspect I have the names of this slightly wrong, but I think that a man called John Young, who was a Native American teacher, taught another man, who I also think was called John Young, about many Native American ways, and some of these teachings became an amazing set of skills, teachings, pathways called the Art of Mentoring. But that aside, the Art of Mentoring thing is a great thing to explore. This guy, this John Young II, as it were, I think, and this I might be so wrong, and I'd love it if you do know out there that I am wrong, please do let me know where this does come from. He did a lot of work with the Kalahari Bushmen, who evidently every single time they meet will spend significant time recounting exactly what's happened between now when I see you and maybe when I saw you this morning at breakfast, and that this non-stop deep relating of detail and of connection is also their relationship to their land. And the truth I live by is the way we do something is the way we do everything. It was a statement made by a wonderful, wonderful woman called Kate Shaler, who was once my teacher. And I truly believe it to be the case. And we all know many of us know the Kalahari Bushmen have the capacity to run around in apparently unlandmarked land for the entirety of a day, chasing something that's zigging, zagging, going all over the place, to go, oh, look, the sun's nearly down. It's 45 minutes before sunset, and we will then go from being hunter to hunted. Time to go home. And they can walk in a straight line home. And no one's ever really known why. But this guy, John Young, has discovered, if you like, that they can do that because they are in profound relationship with the land. And they are in relationship with the land partly in the way that they are. As an expression of the way in which they are in relationship with each other in this utterly ongoing, enduring details, every moment, it all matters. And that connection, the reason we in the West know this story is because the aforementioned man, who may or may not be called John Young, takes this work to businesses and he gets the people in the boardroom to connect, and to connect on a personal level. He wants all of them. He wants their breakfast selves, their weekend selves, their parent selves, their child selves, every one of their selves into the room. And he wants to know, what did you have for breakfast? When did you last argue with your partner? All that detail. And apparently every time the kind of person in charge is, you know, they started at 9, it's getting to 11 o'clock, he's looking at his watch and starting to really tap his foot, and they'll have a tea break and he'll come over and say, you know, so when are we getting on with the work? And the guy will say, well, we kind of are doing the work, and he will see all over the person's faces, no, we're not, we're chatting. And it'll get to 12 o'clock or whatever, and there's steam coming out of the ears of the person in charge because they think they're wasting time. And then in the 3 or 4 hours after lunch, they will get on with what this person in charge imagines is the work, and they will achieve more in those 3 or 4 hours with better outcomes, more congruency, more capacity to follow it through, more depth, more skill in that time than they would normally have achieved in a weekend. And that evidently has been shown over and over and over again.
For me, I'm going to add something different in that I don't do that at the beginning of workshops because of my own, probably from one child of experience when we had a lecture by a nutritionist and they said, what did you have for breakfast? And everybody told him what they had for breakfast. And everybody laughed at me for what I'd had for breakfast.
Oh. I don't ask people what they have for breakfast. I let them share whatever they like.
So what I actually had for breakfast? I'd had salmon fish cakes.
Wow.
Which were protein.
Yeah, pretty left field for a British breakfast.
Yes, it was pretty left field, but I thought it was great. Yeah. So what I do is I usually wait till the first break, because also what I've found is that when people don't know each other to start with, if they have to introduce themselves, they'll really introduce from the mask.
Mm.
And perhaps not present who they really, really are. So I'd rather talk for a little while, and I always share details of my own story. And you sort of watch for the receptiveness or not in the eyes. And then after the first break, say, well, now, what is it you want to learn from this? Why are you here? But I absolutely agree. Once you start talking, as long as you haven't got somebody, you might have to have a talking stick. Do you know what I mean?
I always have a talking stick.
You do? Yes.
Yeah. And actually, I always invite them to talk in 2 or maybe even 3 rounds.
Yes.
So that you first get the mask.
Mm.
And then you get connection, and then maybe you get even deeper connection, or sometimes it might be first you get the mask and then I'm asking for prayers and intentions,
mm-hmm.
and then far deeper connection.
Marvellous. I'm going to be making notes later. I'm going to be copying it all my workshop. Yes. And there's always also the danger that one person will just go on and on and on and on, which is why in the school I'm in, we're taught that there has to be one person holding the energy of the group, and they have to have the authority to say, time for somebody else
now. Yeah. So from the aforementioned art of mentoring, I believe this comes from, is the most delicious expression, which I also state at the beginning, which is that, so there's a more lengthy spiel than this, but the bit from the art of mentoring is that we will all listen with the ears of our heart and speak with leanness of word. And I love that.
Oh, leanness of word.
Isn't it gorgeous?
Yes. Yes. Because that does weed out the person who you just say, well, could you get to the point? Oh, I'm getting to the point, you know, and they've got to put in all the background before they get to the point. So leanness of word.
Yeah. And guidelines is always good. You know, you've got 1 minute to speak this time. Okay, now let's all have 3 minutes. I mean, obviously, it all does depend massively on the size of the group too. But I know this from both running workshops and from running sister circles, that we don't typically in our culture feel deeply heard particularly often. And that also we don't actually get the opportunity to speak about ourselves particularly often. And that to speak about ourselves or what's alive for us or what our worries are or what kind of terrible thing we're carrying around with us, you know, back to your original question about how can we nourish ourselves in winter. Be heard and give someone else the opportunity to be heard, even if it is on Zoom or over the telephone or, you know, however. And indeed, if your idea of utter torment would be a sister circle, a group with Crockford, she's going to make me speak, or, you know, being heard, then maybe just hear yourself. And another thing that I think is a lovely thing to do in winter is keep a diary, keep a journal, do free writing, write letters. If you can't go out to post them, write letters to yourself, or write letters that you're going to write a weekly letter to someone or other, and you're going to gather them all up and post them all at once after 3 months or whatever. You know, letters are a beautiful thing, and writing is a fine art. And it must be remembered that although, to a degree, the point of writing is that it be read, there is also a great deal of point to writing that will never be read. Oh, and yes. That sometimes there's a massive magic in writing what will never be read by any eyes but your own, and perhaps by the gods themselves, and that you can be heard deep in your own being by putting onto paper, or actually by speaking it out loud. And, you know, with the candle or the fire for company or whatever it is, there's a lot of freedom in being heard. And if you really are in that place of, actually, I don't want another person to hear this, then there are many other beings who will willingly listen. And you can call upon, you know, in your tradition, you can call upon an angel. In mine, you can go, if you can't go out, you know, my first choice would always be, I would go and tell a tree. But
tree has an angel.
To me, it has a spirit. But, you know, tell the fire, tell the candle, tell your angel, tell the tree, tell your dog, tell your cat, tell that picture.
There's a lovely technique which I learned from a woman called Terry Lynn Taylor, who wrote a book called Messengers of Light about angels. And that's an angel letter, which you write to the higher self of another to resolve a dispute. And that's a really lovely thing to do, because you could sit down one evening and say, who is there with whom I've got discord? And there's a little form in the book, and if anybody wants to contact me, I've got that form typed out, and I would very happily email it to you, and I'm sure you can find me on the internet, I'm everywhere. And it basically says, an angel letter to the higher self of, and then you write down everything you appreciate about them, and then you write down what the issues between you have been. And then you, if you need to apologise for your part, you apologise for your part. And then you put what your desired outcome might be. And then you say, but let all things be cleared up between us now and forever. And you sign it, fold it up, put it in an envelope, put it somewhere safe. And you know when it's gone. It's usually less than 2 weeks before it goes. And it is carried to the higher self or the other. And if I might just tell two stories before we
please
go.
Please do.
Extraordinary, lovely stories. Probably the best two are the one of the woman. And have I told you about the woman who had the abortion many years ago?
Yes.
That was an angel letter.
God, that story, yes.
That was an angel letter when her son from Africa said, I had this terrible dream where you were on your knees saying you'd killed me.
Yeah.
You know, that changed her life. Yeah. And all she did was write an angel letter to this boy's soul, and he heard it and knew he had to come back to her. And there was another man, one of a man who... he met up with an old girlfriend at a party, and they had a one-night stand, and she got pregnant. But the following meet, he met the love of his life. Ooh. And so he was in a real mess.
Mm.
He said, I'm in a real mess because I have responsibilities. She wants to have the child. I don't know what to do. But I love this other woman, you know, and it's, And I said, well, it's angel letters. The first one is to the baby, the created soul, to explain to the baby that... you are its father, you will honour that the child has some say in its own incarnation, you will honour that, but that you will always be its father. And you will always also honour its mother, whether you love her or not. Second one to the mother of the child, who was wanting to marry him at the time, and the third one to the new love. And so he wrote these three letters, and within 3 weeks, the mother of the child had said to him, actually, I don't want to be with you. I'm quite happy to raise this child on my own. I'd like your, you know, emotional support. I don't need your financial support, but I'd like your emotional support. And can we agree to be friends and work this out? And I know that 6 years on, that was still working well.
Wow, fantastic.
Though I haven't talked to him for quite some time. Yeah. And he's with the other woman.
Yay.
So basically what you do is you lift it up and ask the higher self, the divine, the Christ consciousness, whatever you want, to solve the problem for you. And sometimes it comes in something really silly, like somebody had quarrelled with her mother just before her mother died. So she wrote an angel letter saying, I didn't really quarrel with you. and I feel dreadful. And she was sitting on the bus the following week, and this woman just suddenly said in a louder voice than usual on her phone, "I've told her time and time again she can squabble with me as much as she likes. I still love her."
Aww.
You know, a little, just lovely things like that.
Yeah, beautiful.
So if you want a project to do, heal all your relationships, or at least have a go at it, by writing an angel letter by candlelight in the dark.
Yes, great idea, Maggie. Well done.
Well, it gives you a plan, doesn't it? So, okay, so let's all, if we want to join in a community, the initial community you might want to join in is 8 o'clock UK time each Tuesday night. Mm-hmm. There will be a group of 20 or more of us from all around the world lighting a candle at about 8 o'clock.
And what's the intention held in that lighting?
The intention is to be the light, to be a light for others in these difficult situations. May I be a light. May I be a channel of grace.
Channel of grace, I like that. Yum. Thank you very much.
Bye, everybody.